This is Masters of Dispute Resolution on PodClips. This program is here to do two things: tell compelling stories about people working through difficult conflicts and share practical lessons along the way. With the help of distinguished guests, some of the most accomplished mediators in the field, we explore how mediation works, why it matters, and what it can make possible. Whether you represent parties in a dispute, are dealing with a conflict yourself, or simply want to understand the process better, this podcast offers useful insight into how people can work through difficult issues and move toward resolution. Your host is Len Levy, a mediator and arbitrator with ADR Services, Inc., a leading provider of alternative dispute resolution services. Len spent more than 30 years litigating complex cases and served as mediator since 1998. He is a panel member at ADR Services, Inc., and has been recognized as a super lawyer in alternative dispute resolution for 10 years. And now your host, Len Levy.
Thanks, Daryl, and welcome to Season 7 of Masters of Dispute Resolution. I'm glad you're here. This podcast is all about sharing practical tools for your mediation toolbox, and we're proud to bring it to you in partnership with ADR Services, Inc. and the American Institute of Mediation. We are going to go into a continuation of our storytelling mode, in which each episode tells the story of a conflict, how it affected the people involved, how it was resolved, and what can be learned from both the conflict and its resolution. Some of the details may be changed to protect the confidentiality of mediation while still preserving the heart of the conflict and how it was resolved. Today's episode involves a family dispute, but not a dissolution of marriage or anything like that. Maybe even far more common, but in this case, we are dealing with a few curveballs that are going to be described by our guest, the Honorable Victoria Wood, who is a retired judge and who insists on my calling her Vicky. So we're going to do this rather informally, and I will, just in the introduction, refer to Judge Wood, who established a very successful track record of settling highly disputed cases during her time as a judge, and continues doing that in her practice as a neutral. During her tenure as a judge, and I'm going to really abbreviate things because we could just simply talk about Judge Wood the whole 45 minutes or so that we have. But during Judge Wood's tenure as a jurist, she presided over complex matters in a variety of assignments, including civil, probate, and family law, and dealt with complex jury trials, appeals, high conflict settlement conferences, and held a diverse and impactful role in court leadership. She discovered her, I'd say, true calling and talent for dispute resolution, and made the decision to focus her career on helping people in conflict. And she does so in the context of probate, family law, appeals, and a variety of civil matters, which include employment, business, insurance coverage, construction defect, contract and personal injury disputes, and also, I think, some environmental cases as well. And the best, I think the best way to kind of sum up how Judge Wood is thought of is to refer to some of the testimonials that appear on her website, and feel free to read through them. They are impressive. One of them includes, Judge Wood brings tremendous empathy coupled with formidable analytical and practical skills to a mediation. You feel heard and understood even while she is pointing out weaknesses of your position in addition to its strengths. In the episode that Judge Wood is about to describe, all of those skills are on display and more. So with that, thank you for joining us on Masters of Dispute Resolution. And Vicky, just take it away with that story.
Thank you, Lynn. That's such a kind introduction, and I'm really excited to be here. Appreciate the opportunity. I do have a varied background, work on a large variety of cases. So when I was trying to select the case to talk about today, I paused to sort of ask myself, what I love most about mediation. And what I landed on is one word, which is humanity. The humanity of it, because there are just so many different people and different personalities and all their stories. Every one of them is so incredibly different. And so that can be a challenge as a mediator, because you, no matter how much you prepare and read the briefs and talk to attorneys and research the law, you never exactly know what the energy of the day is going to be like until you're there, and what you're going to need to do to be able to really connect with people in a way that allows you to establish that trust and be able to guide them to resolution. So I think that's, in my mind, one of the biggest challenges for mediators. And so, with that in mind, I chose the case for today because I think it's a really great example of why this is such an important mediation skill to develop. So, a little bit about the case. On the surface, this was a seemingly simple dispute. It was about a house that was jointly owned by an elderly mother and her two adult daughters. Should be simple enough, but below the surface, I discovered it was an intensely toxic family dynamic. These people were carrying years of emotional pain that by this time had really reached a true breaking point. And I'll tell you, this is one of the cases that kind of leaves you thinking truth really can be stranger than fiction,
Right.
and I'll get into some of those twists as we go. But it was also one from the beginning I realized that I was going to need to kind of suspend my judgment about who might be right or wrong or who would prevail if it went to court. Not because the facts didn't matter, obviously they did, but I knew being putting on my judge hat and getting very evaluative was not going to be super helpful for this particular case and these people. I knew pretty quickly this is one where I needed to hold enough space for them to tell their story a bit and to feel heard, so that they could move past the pain a bit and get down to the more difficult question of how the heck we were going to get this case
Right.
resolved. And this is one that absolutely had to get resolved, and I'll go into that. You'll understand why as I go through it.
Okay.
But so that can be the real balance in mediations, is figuring out how much do you let people be heard and emote, or because it takes up time, obviously. And also, if you don't do that, then they might not connect with you. They might not trust the process. But if you let them stay in that emoting space for too long, then they kind of get trapped there, and maybe their positions get reinforced a bit. And so this was a case that tested that balance for me probably as much as any other one that I've worked on. So with that, I'll go into some of the facts for you.
Okay.
This was a immigrant family. They had experienced years of financial hardship. There actually were five children, but three of them were basically estranged. A couple lived out of the country still. The father had apparently committed suicide some years earlier. The situation started really about a decade prior when the mother wanted to purchase a home here in the Bay Area. It was a modest home, fairly reasonable price at the time, but she couldn't qualify for a loan because she didn't really have much income. So she talked her two daughters into, co-signing and being on the mortgage. And the deal was that they would all contribute to the mortgage, and then the daughters would split the utilities, but they would all be on the deed to the house as joint owners, which meant right of survivorship. Nice. And they also, one other piece is they opened a joint checking account that was used to receive the contributions from everyone, and then the bills were paid out of that account. So simple enough, right?
Right. Run somewhat like a business should be
a little
run.
Partnership.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. Simple until it really wasn't simple anymore. So during these years that they lived together, you know, not surprisingly, they had a number of disputes that arose among the three women regarding, you know, expenditures on the house and costs of utilities, accessing the checking account. And then it got really bad. The younger daughter had her fiance at the time move in, and apparently he had done a bunch of work on the house. Mom didn't want to compensate him. Mom didn't want him there at all. And so apparently she started making life pretty miserable for them there, to the point where allegedly she pulled a knife on the fiance.
Nice touch. All right.
Yes. It's one way to get your okay. message across.
Yeah.
And I think may have even cut him a little bit. It couldn't have been too bad, but it was bad enough that ended that 10-year relationship. He hightailed it out. And that daughter was pretty upset about the way that relationship ended abruptly, I guess. But that didn't resolve things. The fights just continued to escalate and become increasingly volatile, but particularly between the mother and the younger daughter. Eventually, the older daughter moved out. She's like, I can't live in this house with you guys. I'm out of here. I think she was still covering, you know, the mortgage, some of the carrying costs. But things continued to get worse between the mother and younger daughter, who were still living together all this time. And specifically, the mom was alleging, I won't go into too much detail, but just, you know, mom alleged screaming fights that her daughter hit her. She threw a chair at her. Apparently she ended up in the emergency room one time. There was a police report. No charges were filed for some reason. Mom also alleged that daughter was not meeting her financial obligations for the house, and that she had actually used some of the funds from that joint checking account for personal expenses.
So this is, I'm sorry, the daughter that is still living in the house, was there a continued relationship between the fiance or significant other of the other daughter?
No, he was gone.
Okay.
But the younger daughter did get into a new relationship that she ultimately married this guy. And again, the mom and moved him into the house, and the mom was not happy about that. So lots more fighting around that. And then it was basically one side, this was on Zoom, on one side we had the mom and the older daughter pitted against the younger daughter and her husband.
Okay.
And the younger daughter alleging a lot of the same stuff: physical, emotional abuse, screaming. She said her mom cut her once with a broken glass, that she purposely exposed electric wires to electrocute them. I mean, like I said, okay. Stranger than fiction on some of this stuff.
Okay, so as this case was brought to you, and how was this brought to you? One of the attorneys?
Referred by an attorney I had met at a networking event.
Mm-hmm.
What happened, I think these attorneys knew that this family needed help, but they also knew there was no liquid funds to really, you know, fund a litigation. So that was kudos to the attorneys for saying, look, we've got to get into mediation right away and get this done. So yeah, that's how it came to me. I think what really brought things to a head was the husband ended up being diagnosed with a terminal illness. And I think he and his wife, the younger daughter, realized they needed to get out of that toxic environment.
Right.
But they couldn't afford to. They couldn't afford the rents to try to move elsewhere without pulling, you know, her share of the equity out of the house. And so mom went to speak with an attorney, told her narrative, and that attorney, rightfully so, said, you know, we might have a viable claim for elder abuse, physical, financial, and maybe some sort of promissory fraud to be able to rescind the ownership, you know, agreement on the house. So that's how that got to an attorney. Then the younger daughter got her own attorney, and then it landed with me.
We're going to be taking a break and getting into the mediation and the setup of the mediation. But it sounds like the dynamic here is one that requires someone with skills being able to read the room, as it were, in the capacity of mediator, and someone who can gain the trust of all the parties here. This is a daunting task, and we're going to get into that daunting task after we return. And I'm Len Levy. We are talking with Judge Victoria Wood, who is conveying what is turning out to be a very interesting story. We'll be back.
Masters of Dispute Resolution would like to thank ADR Services Incorporated, your partner in resolution, and its founder, Lucy Barron, for supporting this podcast. ADR Services is one of the leading providers of alternative dispute resolution in California. Leveraging technology to drive resolution, ADR Services is committed to dynamism in the face of growing client need and an ever-evolving legal climate. Now operating offices in all major legal markets of California, ADR Services provides unparalleled in-person and remote resolution services through its exclusive panel, comprised of more than 130 of the most distinguished and talented neutrals across the state, capable of handling challenging and complex mediations, arbitrations, and other procedures in every field of law. When you seek the services of a neutral and you want results and satisfied clients, contact ADR Services, www.adrservices.com.
Welcome back to Masters of Dispute Resolution. I'm Len Levy. We're talking with retired Judge Victoria Wood, who has conveyed a very fascinating set of dynamics between two daughters and a mother and the husband of one of the daughters in an emotional context that led to a dispute, actually, that seems to have been building for a number of years. Was that right, Vicky?
Absolutely. This was the culmination of a lot of years of pain and hurt.
So let me ask you, you talked to the attorneys representing the parties prior to the mediation session taking place.
I did.
What did you learn from them that became useful in the mediation?
I will say that they did not even scratch the surface of how deeply emotional this was. I don't think they actually realized the level of emotional complexity involved. So, you know, they gave me their legal positions. One aside in particular was really great about focusing on resolution. I think that side understood it needed to be done for mm-hmm. everyone's well-being. Mm-hmm. I mean, those conversations are pretty much always helpful to some degree, but in this case, I still was shocked by where things went.
The factual history is one thing. You referred to, I think, the below-the-line issues, the emotions and feelings that were driving the possibility, resolution, and the terms. So we have these emotional people going into it. Now, you mentioned it was on Zoom, but even on Zoom, you have the opportunity at some point, if you wish to do that, to put everybody in the same room. Did that happen here?
Absolutely not, Len. There is no
Okay.
way. And this is one where I think it was very beneficial to be on Zoom. The intensity of the emotion was just so high, off the charts, especially from one side, that being physically present would have been overwhelming, I think. So it was good being on Zoom. It was still very intense. But I was glad we were on Zoom for this one. One of the things that struck me right out of the gate from both sides of the room was just sort of how tired everyone seemed, just exhausted from the fighting, and also sad and helpless, feeling like there was no out, because initially they thought they could fight it in court, but quickly realized going to court would take money that they just simply didn't have. So I think they were all feeling pretty helpless. They were aligned in one important way, which is they all agreed we had to find a way to get the younger daughter and her husband out of that living situation. So that's what we had going for us in that regard.
What was the older daughter still living in the premises?
No, she had moved out a number of years prior. And she was aligned with the mom. The mom was essentially trying to get the younger daughter off of the deed to rescind her ownership interest in the house. And that would have had a financial benefit to the older daughter. Obviously, she'd be a one half owner versus a one third owner. But I think she was also very protective of her mom, and feeling that a lot of the problems had generated from the younger daughter more than from the mom.
So there was a difference in perception as to the root cause of all of this friction.
For sure. On the other side, you have this the younger daughter, who I say younger, but she was probably in her 40s. Maybe late 40s. And she felt that she had been abused by her mom her whole life, that this was all because of her mom. That was her mom's modus operandi. She even said she believed her mom drove her father to commit suicide. So it was deep, deep stuff. And I think, I told you I really had to suspend my judgment on who was telling the truth. And I think ultimately, at the end of the day, I couldn't help but feel like they were both sort of telling the truth, that they had essentially both been abusive to each other. Who started it? I don't know. Obviously, the daughter would say the mom started it. But it was clear to me that it was going both directions, and that was a huge part of why we needed to get this case resolved and get them out of the house.
Did the attorneys or either of them understand that dynamic going in, or is this something that you, by by conversation with the parties, was able to discern?
That's a good question. I think mom's room was a little more stoic, a little more matter of fact of this is elder abuse. This is fraud. She needs to get out, and she shouldn't have ownership in the house, period. And so I think the attorney in that room was much more focused on the legal side and the viability of their legal claims. But I do think the attorney in the other room understood that there were serious issues of abuse going on, and sort of trauma. And so that was helpful, because that side was very focused on a resolution, kind of at all costs.
So as the day went on, and I'm going to assume that this given the level of emotions here, that this was not just a couple of hour mediation scheduled, that this was at least a full day scheduled.
Well, it wasn't actually because
Really?
they couldn't afford it. So they tried to do it in a half day. I think we went over by an hour or two, and I in this case I may not have even charged them because I knew they had no money. But it was just, and so that added to my challenge was that I needed to provide the space for the necessary emoting, and yet I'm watching the clock tick away on our little half day session. So that definitely added a challenge for me.
Okay. So now you've discovered the true dynamics here. Your approach to reaching a resolution was what? What was that thought process that you went through?
Well, I will, I just want to just touch on this one more thing about the emotionality, because I've had people get very emotional. I've had people cry quite a bit. In the younger daughter's room, this reached a whole new level of sobbing and anger, and it really took on a feeling of like a trauma therapy session. And I'm not a therapist. Nor is that my role in a mediation, but it was just tricky for me. I was really focused on how much do I let her do this, and then how do I artfully get her to pivot away from that and toward
At the
resolution.
same time, maintaining trust in both rooms.
Exactly. That was my immediate focus. I wasn't ready to even think about the solutions yet. It was how do I get her to transfer to a new space? And honestly, the key was letting her do it a little bit and being present with her, as even though it was a virtual hearing. If I had been in contact with her, I probably would have had my hand on her shoulder or something to just say, I hear you. I validate your pain. Sorry for what you went through. And just give that even though we had a really limited amount of time, just give it enough time because when people need to get it out, they need to get it out. It doesn't mean you can let them go on and on, but in this case, she needed to get it out. And then after that, it shifted to where she was ready to start talking about the resolution. And then honestly, Lynn, at that point, it felt like, once everybody was sort of focused on the future and the path out of this, the room started generating the ideas.
Good.
And then it was a matter of me kind of just listening and taking what each side was saying and understanding their priorities and trying to weave it together in a way that people could accept. That part was not as challenging as the rest of it was.
Wow. So the suggestions of resolution, the means of resolution, you let the parties basically come up with those as to what the possibilities were here.
Yeah, and when we had that shift, I felt it in the mother and the daughter that they sort of let go a little bit. But then I had on the younger daughter's side, I had her husband who was fiercely protective of his wife and angry about the situation. And then I had the older daughter who was feeling fiercely protective of the mother and their situation. So I had to also deal with that dynamic. I mean, it's somewhat admirable when people want to protect another person from what they see as being taken advantage of, such that compromise can kind of feel to them like they're betraying their duty to care for
Right.
that person. So that added a challenge. I had to then sort of get the other players to let their guard down a little bit and allow things to move forward. Once we got there, like I said, the ideas started flowing. What happened was it turned out that the older daughter had a little bit of money that they could put on the table to help daughter and husband move out of the house. And then they didn't have a lot, so it was kind of like, this is what we have, take it or leave it. And then it was a negotiation about how she would, the younger daughter would have some equity come out of the house or protect her interest in the house. And what we landed on was ownership interest would turn into just a set monetary amount. And then when the house eventually sold or transferred through, you know, maybe mom passing, she would get a payout of that amount. It would be set, it wouldn't grow. But that's what the negotiation boiled down to, which in the end was pretty simple. You know, I would say the younger daughter was the least happy, but, you know, again, I think because I had taken the time and held that space for her to emote with me and feel me authentically listening and caring, I think there, it developed that level of trust so that when I told her, look, you gotta take this. Okay. She trusted me and she said yes. And that's how we got it done.
Okay. So you did that. And you made the decision you weren't going to be the one that was proposing the specific solutions or the menu of solutions that was left up to the parties, and you gave them the opportunity to lay the foundation that made settling possible. I mean, there are a number of tools that could be used. You know, I've seen in the past like a single negotiating text where say, okay, I've heard from both parties and now I'm going to write something down and I want to see if anybody has any objection to these terms. Did you use that method or some other method?
No, like I said, they had kind of come up with, they had thought through some of the details. So it really boiled down to just this dollar figure for what she would get out of the equity of the house. But there, you know, there were some specifics that were a little tricky. And one piece of that was that it was conditional. It was a conditional settlement that required the daughter and her husband to move out within, well, first, there had to be a payment of money, and then the daughter and the husband needed to move out within 30 days. And if any of those things didn't happen, then the settlement would essentially unravel. And as fate would have it, Lynn,
yes,
those conditional terms did not get fulfilled.
All right. We're going to take a break. And let me also say, the tools that Vicki chose to utilize, these things are not just simply by accident. Gee, what can I do? Let me feel this out. Those mediation tools and using the right mediation tools is really the key. So we're going to be right back after a word from the American Institute of Mediation. And I'm Lynn Levy, and Vicki Wood is going to be discussing things like, what can you learn from this? And we'll be right back.
Hi there. We hope you're enjoying another fascinating episode of Masters of Dispute Resolution. Has the show ever made you think about becoming a mediator and doing the work you're hearing these experts doing? Are you thinking about it right now? Imagine a career where you're working to help people in conflict find win-win solutions. The sense of purpose you'll feel can easily be heard in the voices of the guests on this show and its host, expert mediator Lynn Levy. Or maybe you're a mediator already looking to build your skill set in order to pull off some of the brilliant and out-of-the-box solutions that these guests are talking about. That's where we come in. We're the American Institute of Mediation, and we train mediators of all levels. We're the place you come to learn the basics of mediation or to raise your game in the field. We specialize in mediating commercial and litigated cases, but we teach the skills in such a way that will work in any setting. Our slogan is world-class training for the complete mediator, because we feature the world's best mediation trainers and we prepare you for all aspects of being a professional mediator. Find us online at AmericanInstituteOfMediation.com and browse all of our courses that are available for streaming on demand. You can watch our courses at your convenience, at your desk, on a plane, or in bed in your jammies. We'll see you in the mediation world soon.
Welcome back to Masters of Dispute Resolution. We are in the midst hearing about a mediation, the resolution of the mediation, that took taking into account emotions, distrust, and all kinds of things that required our guest to pull out all the tools that were needed to get this resolved. And then I understand there was a curveball. What was the curveball, Vicki?
There definitely was a curveball. So the very next day, I, you know, kind of put that one out of my mind and moving on, prepping for the next mediation. And suddenly I got word, I think it was that afternoon, that the mother from the case had been found dead in her bed that morning after our mediation. So that was a big shocker. Everyone was kind of stunned, you know, and there were definite question marks, some speculation, just simply because, you know, there was such animosity and vitriol between them, and it had all sort of come to a head. And so then the timing to have this happen the very next day when they all lived in the same house was just crazy. Like I said, stranger than fiction. So basically the settlement was no longer relevant. The circumstances had totally changed. And we just kind of, I said, well, I'm here, but obviously everyone's going to need a little time to process this. Eventually the attorneys did reach back out and ask if I would mediate a second go around between the two daughters.
So at that second session took on a completely different level of emotions, though, in terms of distrust. How did mom really die? Things of that nature.
It did. So I would say the younger daughter's side of the room, it was very different. It was lighter. There was some sadness, but also in a little defensiveness about accusations that had been made, and there was an investigation, but the investigation came up saying that there had been no evidence of foul play. So the younger daughter's room with her husband was one of, okay, well, now we own this jointly 50-50. And so let's get this done and move on with our lives. So it was very different in her room.
So now the participants include the older daughter who's not living there, correct?
Correct.
And the younger daughter and husband who are living there. A completely different dynamic, because with rights of survivorship on a joint deed, you've got the 50-50. And so what did you do initially to move this to a settlement mode?
So it was pretty clear to me that probably, and I think to everybody, that what needed to happen at that point was just to get the house sold as quickly as possible, divide the money up, and let these people move on with their lives. But there was pushback from the older daughter this time. She was in a much more emotional state. She was very angry. She was very suspicious of the circumstances. She was grieving, and she felt like she was taking the stance of, I'm here to protect sort of my mom's legacy and continue with this lawsuit for financial elder abuse and the things that the mom had been pursuing before. And so that's where the work was, is basically trying to talk the older daughter out of taking that stance. And that's where I did most of this case. I had been approaching it from a fairly facilitative approach, which is generally how I start. But this was the point where I kind of switched into my more evaluative mode as a judge, in my experience, how these things are likely to play out, what her risks are, and the concerns that I have. And I think ultimately I was able to talk her down from that ledge of trying to continue the litigation. And so from that point, the resolution was pretty clear. There was one little twist, which was that you have these three other siblings who weren't really involved, but there was a little concern that somebody could come in and try to cause trouble. So in that sense, the two daughters got a little bit aligned in what to do about ensuring that that wouldn't become a problem. So they ended up just agreeing to give the younger daughter time to prepare the house for sale. They agreed on how much money they would put in to fix it up for sale. And so they were aligned in wanting to get the house sold as quickly as possible for highest value. Mm-hmm. And then also the way they decided to do it was that each of them would get one third. And then the remaining third would be divided in five ways between the five siblings. So the sisters would each essentially get a third plus a fifth of a third. Right. And those siblings would only get that money if they didn't contest anything. Okay. So it was creative. And so in a way we became almost on the same team of, okay, how do we practically make sure that this is going to stick and mm-hmm. be smooth and, mm-hmm. you know, done with the whole litigation aspect.
So after the first session, the first before mom's death, was there, it seems like there might not have been time to do anything except possibly acknowledge the settlement or sign an MOU, things of that nature. What was done at that point? Was it in terms of executing?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I think we had an MOU with some bullet points, but one of the attorneys had, I think, saw the writing on the wall that it was going to need to settle something along these lines and had prepared a draft. So I think we were able to get a full settlement agreement drafted that day. There were some tricky aspects to it with regard to the deed. One side, the attorney specialized in probate law, conservatorships, stuff like that. And the other side had a specialty in real estate and business. Mm-hmm. So that was very helpful because that attorney was able to think through some of the intricacies of what needed to be done and the order of how things needed to be done. And he had connections to a realtor who could make sure things went quickly. And so the attorney's strengths kind of really helped facilitate things at the end.
Right. Well, and it sounds like the attorneys were prepared with a draft settlement agreement. And I've suggested that in the past, in part because it facilitates memorializing it, but also because it adds a bit of optimism.
that's true. And in my intro email, when I get assigned a new mediation, I always do recommend that. It also helps, I think, people to walk through and make sure they're catching all the potential pitfalls, because we've all seen, you know, arriving at an agreement in principle, and then of course the devil's in the details and things can fall apart at that stage. So if you figure out those details on the front end and make sure we get those addressed as part of that main agreement, that can be really helpful as well.
So during the course of this resolution, did you, and I'm talking about the final resolution after mom's death, mm-hmm. Did you sense that there was a possibility of a broader reconciliation?
No. And I'm glad you asked that question, Lynn, because I always have that in the back of my mind. And I often will ask the question directly just to find out, is there any value in that to them, because and many times I'll ask it fairly early on, because that can drive the way I handle some things. If I know that it's something that has value, that it is a potential, it's, you know, do no harm kind of approach. But this was one, it was clear there was never going to be healing in this relationship.
Got it. Well, that happens. You know, what I'm also hearing from you is that your ability to see beyond just, when I say just, I don't mean merely, because settling a dispute in and of itself, and that has some great value to people. But I'm talking about going toward the to the next step, which is to not just settle the lawsuit, but also to resolve conflicts between the parties. In a family dynamic, that can become real difficult, even more so than in a business context. I'm really admiring how you do approach it with those kinds of things in mind, because often the parties want more than just settling a lawsuit.
Yeah. Well, thank you for noticing that. And I do think that's an advantage for me. I like I said, I do a lot of variety of work, civil and family law and probate. So much of my work deals with family dynamics, both in the dissolution context and probate. There's nothing more intense and complicated than the emotional scars between family members. But then having that in my pocket as I approach sometimes more straightforward civil or business disputes, I think is an advantage to cases. But yeah, it's always on my mind. If there's room for, if there's healing is something that's on my mind, and there may not be room to heal the family relationship, but that doesn't mean healing won't occur just by virtue of getting the conflict resolved and allowing each side to go their separate ways and move on with their lives without, you know, this thing hanging over them. So that's an important part of why I do this work. It's very meaningful to me.
Well, and even when it, as in this situation that you've described, it doesn't appear that they are going to reconcile in the broader sense. Maybe, just maybe, you planted the seeds where that create the atmosphere that could grow into that, right?
Yeah, I think that's often true. Again, in this case, because of the suspicion that had been aroused, I think it's a very low chance, but it is important to me to always lay that foundation. And it would be kind of nice to be able to go back and check in on cases and see where things ended up and if people were ever able to reconcile the relationship.
Right.
I've thought about that before.
That would be, I can almost see the title of the book, Postscript.
Oh, right? I love it.
Okay. So that's an interesting concept, I think. So one of the other things that, that appeared to me is the concept of having the right people in the room. For example, you described how the husband was deeply supportive of his wife, and that can be helpful, that can be an impediment. In this case, one, did the attorneys recognize that this could have been a potential problem, or did they not?
In this case, he actually was a named defendant for trespass.
Got it.
And so he was a party and was rightfully there, needed to be there. But if he wasn't, if he hadn't been named, I would have still wanted him, even though it did add some challenges. I think that his wife, the younger daughter, needed him. She could, I don't think she would have been able to make decisions without him. And so I think it's important to recognize that sometimes there's people who, even though they do make it more of a challenge, it's better that they're there versus, you know, maybe you come to some level of agreement and then they're consulted after the fact. Mm-hmm. Now they're trying to defend and protect when they haven't been involved right. in the whole evolution of the settlement. So I lean toward letting people be there unless they become really obstructive, you know, and I have asked people to leave before.
Right.
I have one this afternoon where I'm, I may have to do that.
well, also one of the other things that you did was you read the room from a standpoint of the parties being exhausted emotionally. Mm-hmm. And what question I have is, when people are exhausted emotionally and they're in a dispute, there are a couple of ways, or at least a couple of ways, that it could be affected. One is they need to have this behind them, and they are understanding that, and they're just so exhausted that they're more inclined to reach an agreement. The other is that they are so emotionally exhausted that they can't process the solutions and see how they benefit them. In this case, what was that all about?
As frustrating as it was and as helpless as they felt, I think that their attorneys have done a good job in being realistic with them and letting them know that, you know, they were going to need to seriously compromise and get the case done. So kudos to the attorneys for that. And I think that they both did a really good job in supporting the client, advocating for the client, but also facilitating my ability to connect and develop a rapport and trust from the client, because I do think both of the attorneys understood that the absolute number one priority was arriving at an agreement that got the daughter and husband out of the house and bring some peace to the situation. So my hat is off to the attorneys for their hard work on the case.
Yeah, and it sounded like they understood the difference between advocacy at trial and advocacy in mediation.
Absolutely.
Something that can make the difference between cases settling or not settling.
Yeah. And I've worked with both of these attorneys on more than one occasion, and they've been true to that. I think they're good at understanding the challenges in the case and working with their client in its delicate balance. You know, the attorneys share that same challenge that a mediator shares, which is how much do you support and listen versus how much do you have to tell them like it is and push them to make those hard decisions. So
all leading toward the recognition of what the party's interests are, advancing those interests and reconciling those interests. Are there any other takeaways that you want to share with the audience as far as what you learn from this, or what people could do, what attorneys might be able to do?
I touched on in the very beginning for mediators to understand is the importance of staying sort of nimble and being able to pivot and adjust to what the situation reveals that it needs. If you're too formulaic about your approach or too evaluative too soon, you're going to lose people. And, you know, it's taking the time to establish that trust so that at the end of the day, you're really able to hammer it home, and they'll trust you when you need them to. Good part probably goes part and parcel with looking for, you know, the human behind the dispute. It can be easy to maybe look at a situation like this as just a dysfunctional family that was abusive to each other, and maybe not have as much compassion for it as you should. Those people who were being that way had some reason based on how they were treated that made them be that way. And so staying with the sort of a compassionate eye for the humanness of it all has been really helpful for me.
Well, I appreciate everything that you've done and accomplished in this case. It was truly an impressive way to conduct a mediation session and guide the parties gently into where they needed to be. And so we're basically out of time. And as we wrap up, what's the best way for listeners to get in touch if they would like to learn more about you or your practice or availability?
Yes. So I am, like you, with ADR Services. My direct website is judgewood.com, which is pretty easy to remember, judgewood.com. But of course, you can always just reach out to ADR Services directly and ask for me there or one of our many other remaining amazing neutrals that we have on our staff there.
Well, thank you so much for being here. I really, really appreciate this conversation. And I hope you'll consider joining us in the future. This was great.
When I get another really exciting one, I'll reach out.
All right.
Well, thanks again.
You're quite welcome. And thank you, Daryl Wayne, our engineer and producer. I'm Len Levy, and this is Masters of Dispute Resolution on Podclips.io, powered by Alentius Labs, Inc. I hope you've enjoyed the conversation. Take care, keep listening, and remember, peace of mind is enhanced when conflicts are resolved.
If you wish to contact Len Levy, you can reach him through his email at lslevy@adrservices.com, through Len's website, lenlevymediate.com. Telephone him at 818-903-5562, or contact his case manager at ADR Services, 213-683-1600.